Antifragile: Things That Gain from Disorder. Author: Nassim Nicholas Taleb. The Antifragile. Some things benefit from shocks. They thrive and grow when exposed to volatility, randomness, disorder, and stresses, and love adventure, risk, and uncertainty. Yet, in spite of the ubiquity of phenomenon, there is no word for the exact opposite of fragile. Let us call it antifragile. Antifragility is beyond resilience or robustness. The resilient resists shocks and stays the same. The antifragile gets better. The property is behind everything that has changed with time, and antifragility determines the boundary between what is living and organic, say the human body, and what is inert, say a physical object or stapler on your desk. The antifragile loves randomness and uncertainty, which also means a love of errors, a certain class of errors. Antifragility has a singular property of allowing us to deal with the unknown, to do things without understanding them, and to do them well. We are largely better at doing than we are at thinking, thanks to antifragility. I'd rather be dumb and antifragile than extremely smart and fragile at any time. It is easy to see things around us that, like a measure of stresses and volatility, economic systems, your body, your nutrition, your psyche. There are even financial contracts that are antifragile. They are explicitly designed to benefit from market volatility. The antidote to the black swan. Black swans are large-scale, unpredictable, and irregular events of massive consequence, unpredicted by a certain observer, and such unpredictor is generally called the turkey, when he is both surprised and harmed by these events. I have made the claim that most of history comes from black swan events. While we worry about fine-tuning our understanding of ordinary, and hence develop models, theories, or representations that cannot possibly track them or measure the possibility of these shocks, black swans hijack our brains, making us feel we sort of or almost predicted them, because they are retrospectively explainable. We don't realize the role of these swans in our life because of this illusion of predictability. Life is a lot more labyrinth place than shown in our memory. Our minds are in the business of turning history into something smooth and linear, which makes us underestimate randomness. When we see it, we fear it and overreact. Because of this fear and thirst for order, some human systems, by disrupting the invisible or not so visible logic of things, tend to be exposed to harm from black swans and almost never get any benefit. You get pseudo-order when you seek order. You only get a measure of order and control when you embrace randomness. Complex systems are full of interdependencies, hard to detect, and non-linear responses. Non-linear means that when you double the dose of, say, a medication, or when you double the number of employees in a factory, you don't get twice the initial effect, but rather a lot more or a lot less. 2 weekends in Philadelphia are not twice as pleasant as a single one. Also, the modern world may be increasing in the technological knowledge, but, paradoxically, it is making things a lot more unpredictable. Now, for reasons that have to do with the increase of the artificial, the move away from artificial and natural models, and the loss in robustness owing to the complications in the design of everything, the role of black swans is increasing. Further, we are victims to a new disease called neomania. That makes us build black swan vulnerable systems progress. Robust is not robust enough. Consider that Mother Nature is not just safe, it is aggressive in destroying and replacing, in selecting and reshuffling. When it comes to random events, robust is certainly not good enough. In the long run, everything with the most minute vulnerability breaks. Given the ruthlessness of time, yet our planet has been around for perhaps 4 billion years. And, convincingly, robustness can't just be it. You need perfect robustness for a crack not to end up crashing the system. Given the unattainability of perfect robustness, we need a mechanism by which the system regenerates itself continuously by using, rather than suffering from, random events, unpredictable shocks, stresses, and volatility. The Fragilista. Our idea is to avoid interference with things we don't understand. Well, some people are prone to the opposite. The Fragilista belongs to that category of persons who are usually in suit and tie, often on Fridays. He faces your jokes with icy solemnity and tends to develop back problems early in life from sitting at a desk, riding aeroplanes, and studying newspapers. He is often involved in strange ritual, something commonly called a meeting. Now, in addition to these traits, he defaults to thinking that what he doesn't see is not there, or what he does not understand does not exist. At the core, he tends to mistake the unknown for the non-existent. The Fragilista, medical, economic, social planning, is one who makes you engage in policies and actions, all artificial, in which the benefits are small and visible. And these side effects are potentially severe and invisible. Please behead me. In a Roman recycled version of a Greek myth, the Scythian tyrant Dionysus II has the fawning courtier Democles enjoy the luxury of a fancy banquet, but with a sword hanging over his head, tied to the ceiling with a single hair from a horse's tail. A horse's hair is the kind of thing that eventually breaks under pressure, followed by a scene of blood, high-pitched screams, and the equivalent of ancient ambulances. Damocles is fragile. It is only a matter of time before the sword strikes him down. In another ancient legend, we find Phoenix, the bird with splendid colors. Whenever it is destroyed, it is reborn from its own ashes. It always returns to its initial state. Hydra in Greek mythology is a serpent-like creature that dwells in the Lake of Lerna, near Argos, and has numerous heads. Each time one is cut off, two grow back. So harm is what it likes. Hydra represents anti-fragility. Proto-anti-fragility. Now consider a case when the poisonous substance in some dose makes you better off overall. One step up from robustness. Hormesis, a word coined by pharmacologists, is when a small dose of a harmful substance is actually beneficial for the organism, acting as a medicine. A little bit of an otherwise offending substance, but not too much, acts to benefit the organism and makes it overall better, as it triggers some overreaction. This was not interpreted at the time in the sense of gains from harm, so much as harm is dose-dependent, or medicine is dose-dependent. Hormesis is well known by the ancients. But it was only in 1888 that it was first scientifically described, though it was still not given a name, by a German toxicologist, Hugo Schultz, who observed that small doses of poison stimulate the growth of yeast, while larger does harm. Some researchers hold that the benefits of vegetables may not be so much in what we call the vitamins, or some other rationalizing theories, that is, ideas that seem to make sense in narrative form, but have not been subjected to rigorous empirical testing. But in the following, plants protect themselves from harm and fend off predators with poisonous substances that, ingested by us in the right quantities, may stimulate our organisms. Or so goes the story. Again, limited, low-dose poisoning triggers healthy benefits. Learning from the mistakes of others. Every plane crash brings us closer to safety, improves the system, and makes the next flight safer for those who perish contributes to the overall safety of others. Swiss Flight 111, TWA Flight 800, and Air France Flight 447 allowed the improvement of the system. But these systems learn because they are anti-fragile and set up to exploit small errors. The same cannot be said of economic crashes, since the economic system is not anti-fragile in the way it is presently built. Why? There are hundreds of thousands of flights every year, and the crash in one plane doesn't involve others. So errors remain confined in highly epistemic whereas globalized economic systems operate as one. Errors spread and compound. What's to tell policymakers? Tell them I love randomness. One of life's packages, no stability without volatility. Seeking stability by achieving stability has been a great sucker game for economic and foreign policies. The list is depressingly long. Take rotten governance, like the one in Egypt before the riots of 2011, supported by the United States for 4 decades in order to avoid chaos, with the side effect of a coterie of privileged pillagers using superpowers as a backstop, identical to bankers using their too-big-to-fail status to scam taxpayers and pay themselves high bonuses. In praise of procrastination, few understand that procrastination is our natural defense, letting things take care of themselves and exercise our own anti-fragility. It results from ecological or naturalistic wisdom, and is not always bad. At an existential level, it is my body rebelling against its entrapment. It is my soul fighting the Procrustean bed of modernity. Granted, in the modern world, my tax return is not going to take care of itself, but by delaying a non-vital visit to a doctor, or deferring the writing of passage until my body tells me that I'm ready for it, I may be using very potent naturalistic filter. I write only if I feel like it, and only on a subject I feel like writing about, and the reader is no fool. So I use procrastination as a message from my inner self and my deep evolutionary past to resist interventionism in my writing. Yet some psychologists and behavioral economists seem to think that procrastination is a disease to be remedied and cured. Media-driven neuroticism. The best way to mitigate interventionism is to ration the supply of information as naturalistically as possible. This is hard to accept in the age of the internet. It has been very hard to explain that the more data you get, the less you know what's going on, and the more iatrogenics you cause. People are still under the illusion that science means more data, mistaking the unintelligible for the unintelligent. Young Friedrich Nietzsche wrote his first book, The Birth of Tragedy, while in his early 20s. He went after Socrates, whom he called the mystagogue of science, for making existence appear comprehensible. This brilliant passage exposes the sucker rationalistic fallacy. Perhaps, thus he, Socrates, should have asked himself, what is not intelligible to me is not necessarily unintelligent. Perhaps there is a realm of wisdom from which the logician is exiled. The argument is precisely what Nietzsche vituperated against. Knowledge is the panacea. Error is evil. Hence, science is an optimistic enterprise. The mandate of scientific optimism irritated Nietzsche. This use of reasoning and knowledge at the service of utopia. Forget the optimism-pessimism business that is addressed when people discuss Nietzsche, as a so-called Nietzschean pessimism distracts from the point. It is the very goodness of knowledge that he questioned. To sum up, you are anti-fragile for a source of volatility if potential gains exceed your potential losses and vice versa. Further, if you have more upside than downside, then you may be harmed by lack of volatility and stresses.